What you're about to hear was aired on Planet Philadelphia, environmental radio show on Germantown Community Radio, 92.9 FM, WGGTLP in Philadelphia, and on gtownradio.com.
We're very happy to be speaking with Emily Pontecorvo today. She is a reporter with the news organization GRIST, and we saw a very interesting article that she wrote about hydrogen. Welcome, Emily. So nice to be talking with you today.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Good. And could you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe why you were so interested in writing about hydrogen?
Yeah. So like you said, I'm a reporter at GRIST. We're a environmental and climate news nonprofit news site. At GRIST, I'm one of the main people reporting on energy, clean energy, kind of emerging technological solutions. And so ever since the bipartisan infrastructure law was passed and there was lots and lots of money for clean hydrogen in that bill, $8 billion for clean hydrogen hubs around the country, I've been really interested in hydrogen. What is it? Why are we talking about it? There's sort of a long history of people thinking it could be an energy solution and then that never really coming to pass. But now it's come back and people seem to have a lot more faith that it's really, you know, going to happen this time. And so I've just been really interested in following that story. There's obviously so much money at stake. And there's also a lot of ways that it could go wrong. And so just looking at, you know, what are the potential benefits? What are the risks? And trying to help people follow what's going on there.
So why don't we start with how hydrogen can be an important tool in decarbonizing our economy, our society, and in what ways?
Depending on who you ask, there are many, many ways that we could use hydrogen, clean hydrogen, or there are a very select few. And so that's one of the big debates is what will we use this for? And one thing about hydrogen, so you can use it as a fuel and you could basically swap it in for fossil fuels in a lot of applications. So it can, in theory, power vehicles, be used for heating in your home, be burned in a power plant for electricity, things like that. And then there are sort of industrial uses for hydrogen where it can be used as a sort of like ingredient in different industrial processes like steel making, where today we use coal as a kind of key feedstock for steel making. You could swap that out for hydrogen. There's also sort of the ways that we use hydrogen in our economy today. So hydrogen is a key ingredient in fertilizer. And today the hydrogen that we use in that process comes from fossil fuels. It's dirty and emitting. And so if we produce hydrogen in a cleaner way, we could make fertilizer, which, you know, helps us feed a growing population in the world. We could reduce emissions from that process. And there are many, many, I mean, there are like dozens and dozens of different ways we could potentially use hydrogen, but those are just some of a few that people are
transportation talking. Is one of them that they talk about, right? Which could be a big
So I mentioned like you could burn it in an engine. There's also people talking about using it for aviation, for flying, for shipping, you know, powering big cargo boats and things like that.
Also, I believe there's a number of ways that hydrogen is now produced and planning to be produced. There's like a whole color spectrum of them. So could you talk about that?
Yeah, the gray, the blue, the green, and gold. I haven't
heard of
gold. That's
a new one I found, yes.
I'm not sure I know what gold is.
It's apparently you can use old coal mines or other mines to make hydrogen somehow. I don't know how.
Yeah. Well, I'll walk through the ones I know. So when people talk about gray hydrogen, that's basically the main way we make hydrogen today. You take methane or natural gas, and there's a, you know, chemical process of basically separating the hydrogen from natural gas. And it's a process that releases carbon into the atmosphere. But that's how most of our hydrogen in the world is made today. Then when we're talking about making cleaner forms of hydrogen, there are different ways to do this. So blue hydrogen is basically using that exact same process that we have today with natural gas, but adding equipment to the process that captures the carbon. And so you're still just separating the hydrogen from the natural gas, but you're capturing any carbon released from that process. Then people talk about green hydrogen. This is totally different process. There's no natural gas involved. Instead, you're separating the hydrogen from a water molecule. So you take water, H2O, and you basically zap it with clean electricity, and it separates the molecule, and there's no emissions released. There's only, you know, oxygen released, essentially. So that's typically called electrolysis. The other category is steam methane reforming. And with electrolysis, that's electricity and water. If the electricity comes from a clean source, like renewable energies, wind or solar, throughout the whole life cycle of production, there are no emissions being produced. And I think, you know, something I didn't mention earlier when I was talking about how hydrogen could be used, one of the benefits of hydrogen is that when you burn it, you don't release any carbon into the atmosphere. That is maybe kind of obvious, but that is the bottom line here. So green hydrogen is with renewable energy. And then people also talk about pink hydrogen, which is very similar. You're still using water and electricity, but the electricity would come from nuclear energy, which doesn't release greenhouse gases into the atmosphere.
You've talked a little bit about how the manufacture of hydrogen relates to or interacts with the renewable sources of energy, such as solar and wind, but there are probably other ways in which it interacts with those. So maybe you could talk about that.
Well, so what I've talked about is you would basically use renewable energy to produce hydrogen. And then that gives you this very flexible fuel that you can use for all the things that we talked about earlier. Another kind of potential use for hydrogen that people see promise in is that it can basically become a form of energy storage. So you've taken wind energy or solar energy that was produced at a time when it was very abundant, and maybe, you know, there wasn't enough demand to use all of that wind energy. So you're taking some of it and you're turning it into hydrogen. And you can basically store that hydrogen fuel for months or weeks or however long, and then you can burn it in a power plant later. And so people see it as a way of, you know, the same way we talk about using batteries to store renewable energy for later when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing. That's sort of one interaction.
What you talked about in your article was this could be a great boon for decarbonizing, or it could backfire and be really problematic.
Sure. People see a lot of promise in green hydrogen in producing it from renewable energy because it's sort of magical, right? You can get this clean energy source, hydrogen, using clean energy. There's no emissions throughout the process. And that sounds great. And it's like, you know, if you're choosing between that and doing it with natural gas and carbon capture, you know, it seems like there's more of a chance that that's going to be clean, right? The problem is that economically, the most like kind of financially sound way for companies to produce hydrogen using renewable electricity is to just plug into the power grid. And basically, you know, our power grid today is not clean. It's getting cleaner every year, but it's still largely made up of natural gas and in many places coal. And so one of the ways that companies were planning to kind of plug into the electricity grid, but still say we're using renewable electricity, is to basically buy credits. There's renewable energy credits. There are different kind of arrangements called power purchase agreements, different ways that they can sort of buy the clean energy from somewhere else and claim that their production is clean, even though they're plugging into the power grid. And first off, you know, there's a lot of research out there showing that these renewable energy credits, they don't really lead to additional renewable energy being added to the grid. And so the sort of claim that your production is being powered by some clean energy source just because you're buying these credits is very dubious. Then, you know, even if you are buying those renewable energy credits from a project that's brand new, that's being added to the grid to kind of match the demand that you're adding to the grid, if that agreement is with a solar farm and your hydrogen plant is operating 24/7, there's obviously going to be times of the day where you're not pulling power from that solar farm. You're just pulling from whatever resources are available. And usually at night, those resources are coal and natural gas. And so I spoke to this PhD student at Princeton who's been looking into these different interactions of what does it mean to have a hydrogen plant that's plugged into the grid? And he found that, you know, the emissions that this plant would cause by operating at night would be so much that it would make the hydrogen production even dirtier than the gray hydrogen that we have today. And so it points to how if we're allowing green hydrogen producers to just plug into the grid, buy these credits or make these sort of financial agreements that don't have really strong guardrails around when they're operating and, you know, whether they're bringing new renewable energy online, we could end up with higher emissions than what we have today with the gray kind.
Interesting. And I think you were talking about guardrails, and that kind of brings to mind the funding, because how the funding is allotted, who decides what is appropriate, what is really truly green and helps decarbonize. So could you go into that?
I mentioned earlier, there's the bipartisan infrastructure law that had $8 billion for clean hydrogen hubs. There's also in the recent Inflation Reduction Act, a new tax credit. And this tax credit can be extremely lucrative. Like when I have talked to people about this tax credit, they said this is the most money available out of all the tax credits in the Inflation Reduction Act is in the hydrogen credit. And it's a sliding scale. And so basically a company can earn between, I think, like a couple cents per kilogram of hydrogen that they produce all the way up to $3 per kilogram of hydrogen they produce, depending on the emissions of the process. But that's still, you know, deciding how to measure the emissions from a hydrogen process is complicated because with green hydrogen, like we said earlier, if you're making it with electricity and water, there are no emissions at the point of production. But if the electricity comes from natural gas or from coal, then there are obviously emissions upstream. And so there's a lot of questions about how will the Department of Energy and the Treasury Department kind of account for those emissions and account for different mechanisms like clean energy credits to balance them out and erase them.
Are they taking the whole life cycle or just the process of producing the hydrogen?
Yeah, they are. They're in both cases, in the case of the hydrogen hubs and in the case of the tax credit, they are taking into account the whole life cycle. So that's great. But there are still questions about, there's just different ways to measure these things. So there's what we just talked about where if you are going to take into account, you know, the electricity and where did it come from? How dirty is it? There's different ways to measure grid electricity. Your listeners might know that there's no way to trace an electron from a power plant to the place that it's used. That's impossible. And so there are different ways to sort of estimate what the emissions impact of any one facility is that uses electricity from the grid. And so there's just questions about, you know, how they're going to calculate that. And again, what kind of like, you know, mechanisms like renewable energy credits they'll accept to offset any emissions that they attribute to a facility. And, you know, this question is also applies to blue hydrogen, what we talked about earlier, which is the hydrogen made from natural gas using carbon capture. A really big question there regarding life cycle emissions is on the way from fracking gas well to a hydrogen plant, you have all this gas transportation equipment and the natural gas can leak into the atmosphere, you know, very notoriously does leak into the atmosphere all throughout the natural gas production chain. And so, you know, there's different ways to measure how much is leaked into the atmosphere. When natural gas leaks into the atmosphere unburned, it's a much, much stronger climate pollutant than carbon dioxide. So there's similar questions around how are they going to measure those upstream emissions for natural gas as for electricity.
Mm-hmm. I've heard recently that satellites have seen huge plumes of methane being released from refineries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your article alludes to accounting rules that the Treasury Department is going to put in place to clarify some of these questions, maybe. Have they done that already? And if not, when are these rules expected?
No, they haven't. And I think it's kind of unclear when they will release guidelines or draft guidelines around this. I think it's expected in the next year, possibly in the next 6 months. I guess I'll just say that, you know, one of the things that I talked about in my article that this researcher from Princeton found is with green hydrogen from electricity, there's no way to make it totally, totally clean. And it's a little bit confusing and complicated why, but basically the tax credit is so lucrative. It gives hydrogen producers so much buying power for renewable energy that they could actually outcompete like electric utilities for that renewable energy. So he found that in a place like Wyoming, where there's great wind resources, you could have hydrogen producers coming in and buying the best wind resources before electric utilities buy it to provide to their customers like you and me. And it would ultimately mean that in a place like Wyoming, the coal plants and the natural gas plants would stay open longer than, and it would be economic for longer than they might otherwise be, because there is this big kind of demand pull for hydrogen. And there's really no way around those kind of interactions. He actually found that it's really because the tax credit is so high, and without the tax credit, you might not see those kinds of effects. At the same time, that's not the case everywhere. To him, there are three key ingredients for these guidelines that the Treasury Department is going to be putting together to make sure that green hydrogen is as clean as we can possibly get it to be. They might be a little jargony, but one is additionality. So making sure that a hydrogen plant, when they're plugging into the grid and they're buying clean energy credits from like a wind farm or something, that wind farm has to be new. It has to be bringing additional renewable energy onto the grid to, you know, make sure that's accounting for the new demand from the hydrogen plant. It also has to be, you know, regionally relevant. Like the electricity from there would have to be actually deliverable to the hydrogen plant. There's a lot of sort of congestion points in the grid, and it would have to just, you know, be within the same region. And then the third thing is something you may have heard about, sort of a new trend in corporate clean energy policies, but it's called 24/7 clean. And so this third thing is about making sure that you are matching your demand for electricity. Every hour of it has to be matched with a clean resource. So if your wind plant is maybe operating, well, so let's just talk about a day. So if the wind farm is giving you 15 hours a day of clean electricity, you need to also contract with other resources that can take care of some of those other hours that you're going to be operating, or you need to not operate during those hours. Because like we talked about earlier, some other dirty power plant is going to kick into gear to meet your demand during those other hours.
Just a short break for station ID.
You're listening to Germantown Community Radio, 92.9 FM, WGGT LP, Philadelphia, and online at gtownradio.com.
Now back to the interviews.
Sounds so a lot of this has to do with, from what I got from your article, the business case to incentivize these companies to even get into the manufacture and hydrogen distribution business and stay in business, but still be green. Am I right in that?
So that this industry essentially doesn't exist today. We produce hydrogen for a few select uses, mainly, like I said earlier, for fertilizer. And we also use it in oil refining and a couple other things. But, you know, none of that hydrogen is clean. It's all dirty. And so, yeah, the Biden administration is just really placing a big bet that we need to produce clean hydrogen. And it's not economic to produce it today. It's not competitive with the gray hydrogen that we have today. And so the hope is by subsidizing it through the tax credit and bringing these projects to life through the hydrogen hub funding, that it will kickstart this new industry and bring it to scale a lot more quickly than it would on its own.
It sounds like hydrogen could be a good answer for a number of very difficult problems, but it's also, from what you're saying, very complicated.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that it's the Treasury Department who is somehow deciding how this is all going to work out.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a funny part of it, because you don't think of the Treasury Department as having expertise about this kind of thing. And, you know, of course, they're going to be assisted by the Department of Energy, and the Department of Energy will be weighing in on this. But I mean, that's the case for all of the tax credits in the Inflation Reduction Act. The Treasury has a lot of work to do in not only coming up with all of these guidelines, but also implementing these programs and making sure that, you know, people aren't cheating the system and that we are actually cutting emissions through these programs. So it's definitely a lot. And that was one thing. I spoke to folks from the nonprofit RMI. They're a clean energy research nonprofit. And that was one thing that they were kind of stressing, is even though, you know, doing this additionality with 24/7 clean energy matching, if you had those like very, very strong requirements in place, that would be the best way to make sure emissions are low. But you also have to balance the fact that, you know, that might be really hard for the Treasury to implement at this point in time, when that's still kind of a new idea. And so maybe that's something that has to be kind of phased in later. And then we might have, you know, dirtier production that we're subsidizing in the meantime. Yeah, it's really kind of unclear, you know, what the Treasury can handle in terms of the administrative side of this.
You were talking about what the Treasury can handle. And from reading your article, there was a paragraph or a few sentences talking about how the IRS will need to come in to judge whether people are complying with whatever rules that the Treasury comes up with. And so the Treasury has to make the rules on these very complicated issues, but they have to make them in a way that people can understand them and report them in their taxes.
Yeah. And so far what we've seen just from the, you know, I mentioned that the comment period recently closed, and I've looked through some of the comments that companies have provided, and a lot of hydrogen companies are pushing back on this idea of having 24/7 clean energy matching. They don't want to do that. They think it's too complicated, that it's going to be cost prohibitive. And what the researchers I spoke to who are, you know, advocating for that say is, they're like, well, then they shouldn't get the tax credit. Like, if they don't want to make sure that it's really clean. It's sort of this debate over, Do we want to prioritize really kind of supporting this new industry that's in such early stages and getting it off the ground? Or do we want to, you know, do that, but make sure that we're only supporting the most kind of stringent, clean process?
The companies that are producing the hydrogen are going to have to, I mean, who is deciding that they're following the rules? Is that the IRS? Is that someone else?
I think it's the IRS. And, you know, the IRS has already been implementing kind of similar tax credits. You know, there's tax credits for building wind and solar farms. Those have been in place for, you know, over a decade. There's a carbon capture tax credit that already existed. And so they have some experience implementing these kinds of programs. But I know that there's, you know, especially with the carbon capture credit, there has been some problems in the past with actually tracking the emissions and making sure that those emission reductions were real.
So you were alluding to these incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act and some of the other laws that have come down. And I was thinking that we could extrapolate that the similar problems might happen with, let's say, with electric vehicles. They have to use the grid for their electricity as well. Is that true, that all of these will have some of the same problems?
That's a really interesting question. And it's one that I thought a little bit about while I was writing this, because yeah, there's electric vehicles, there's electric heat pumps, you know, we're really moving to an economy that's powered by the grid, and getting the grid to be as clean as possible is really important. I think it's a little bit different with hydrogen, because with an electric vehicle, when you're plugging into the grid, you are powering the electric vehicle. It's going to use that electricity directly. It's going to store it in a battery first, but it's going to use it directly. When you're producing hydrogen, you're producing an energy carrier that's then going to be burned to power some other process. And you lose a lot of energy in the process. So, you know, maybe it'd be helpful to talk about home heating. There's a big debate over whether we should use hydrogen to produce heat in our homes. And the natural gas industry has really strong messaging that this is the future. Because it basically enables them to continue their business model where they're delivering a fuel through a pipeline into your home and you're burning it. The problem is that, you know, the alternative to that is electric heating with an electric heat pump, which is a very, very efficient form of heating. And if you use electricity to power a heat pump, you're using way, way less energy than if you're using electricity to produce hydrogen to then deliver to your house to burn in a furnace or whatever. You're losing so much energy in that whole process. So I think efficiency is kind of like the main argument for why it's not so much an issue with just your electric car or your heat pump.
That's a very interesting point. I had not thought of that.
Yeah. And a related question is our grid going to be capable and reliable enough to encompass all these new demands?
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, that's a whole other can of worms, right? I mean, there's a lot of questions about electricity planning and regulation, utility regulation, and just making sure that, you know, our utilities are getting cleaner, and as they get cleaner, are also investing in the transmission infrastructure we need to make sure that it's reliable. I think reliability is thrown around a lot as a, you know, it produces a lot of fear. You know, utilities will say that they need to keep natural gas plants because they're more reliable. Although we've seen, you know, in recent storms that that's not always the case. You know, just this past holiday, we had all over the Northeast, there was, my utilities were sending me messages saying like, turn off your appliances, turn down your heating. We have a natural gas shortage and we could have outages. So Yeah, reliability, it's hard. I mean, I think we can certainly do it. We can certainly have a reliable grid and power an electrified economy. We just have to invest in it. We have to invest in transmission and make sure that we're making the right decisions there.
Is there enough money in some of these bills, like the IRA, to do that? Or it's more toward the incentives of the hydrogen and not the grid?
There's definitely money in the IRA to increase electricity generation. You know, there's still more money for clean power, and we need a lot of that. You know, it's not just about transmission. We also need to just produce more electricity. There's less for transmission, and like, you know, if anyone's been following the recent debate over Joe Manchin's permitting deal, that's one of the big debates is like with transmission, it's not just about having the funding to do that. It's about having the right regulatory environment in place to build out that resource. So there were things in the bipartisan infrastructure law for transmission that maybe made it a little easier, but we're not quite there yet where we can really build out that infrastructure more easily. From my understanding, though, that kind of national debate that's happening around permitting, it's really more about the big interstate transmission lines. And there is a lot that can be done on a local level at your local electricity utility to invest in the local distribution lines. And that's something that public service commissions, your local state regulators could and should be pushing those utilities to invest in the kind of local lines.
Very
And
interesting.
they are controlled by the states themselves, so it depends to some extent, I guess, on the politics within each individual state, right?
Right. Well, they're mostly owned by private utilities who are regulated by the state. Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like we're trying to fly a plane as we're building it.
I think that's probably a good analogy. You know, we're running out of time, or you know, we're just trying to move a lot more quickly than we ever have. And there's a lot that we know how to do, right? We know how to build solar and wind. Those resources are now some of the cheapest in the world. But there's still a lot of challenges in cutting emissions that we have never done before, and that we don't exactly know what's going to work and what's not. And so it is a matter of just trying a lot of different things.
I did want to ask you to talk about Pennsylvania because here, from everything I've read, it seems like they want to make hydrogen out of gas that's fracked, which is basically methane. So I guess your opinion on that strategy.
So I'll just say for one thing, I don't know a ton about the proposal in Pennsylvania. You know, I'm aware that they're interested in being a blue hydrogen hub, and the bipartisan infrastructure law, one of the provisions for the $8 billion in funding is that at least two of the hubs have to be in places that were historically fossil fuel intensive. And at least one of the hubs has to use natural gas. And so, you know, that's just part of the when Congress made this funding available, that's what they made it available for. They made that decision, and Pennsylvania is trying to take advantage of that based on the resources that it has. I don't think they've made public the what they submitted to the Department of Energy. So, you know, it's not totally clear to me what kinds of facilities would be using the hydrogen, where the natural gas come from, how they would, you know, account for the upstream methane leakage from pipelines and that kind of thing. You know, I guess I would just say that it's really, really important to look at the upstream emissions. How are we measuring those? Is there a plan to, you know, really minimize that leakage, because if you don't minimize the methane leaks, then blue hydrogen is just not much cleaner than gray hydrogen. And that's the biggest risk, is if we give all this government public funding to these projects and then they don't actually reduce emissions, like, what are we doing? So, you know, that's a big risk. And then obviously for the communities in Pennsylvania that live near fracking operations, where those operations could be prolonged and the demand for natural gas will be maintained through these projects, that's, you know, a risk for them. And then third, like I was saying before, I think it's really important to look at what facilities are going to be using this hydrogen, because there's a million different ways we could use hydrogen, but it's very energy intensive to make, whether you make it with natural gas or with electricity. And honestly, like the less we can use it, the better. The less we can use it, the more we have energy for all the other things in our society that we need. So, you know, if it's being proposed to pipe into people's homes for heating, then that might be just a total waste. Or if it's being proposed to burn in a power plant, there are cases where that might make sense. And there are cases where that could also be wasteful, because that could come from, you know, wind or solar or some other form that can be used more directly. So yeah, these are all the questions that I would think about when trying to assess whether this project in Pennsylvania is really going to benefit people or the economy.
Okay.
And I don't know whether our legislators or deciders are thinking about those questions.
Well, we've talked about a lot of very complex and personally interesting stuff to me.
But I apologize to your listeners if I rambled a little, or like, this stuff, it just gets really complicated really quickly, and it's hard to keep it in kind of layman's terms.
Yes. So. Yes. Well, I think you've been doing very well. Do you have suggestions for what people should do who might be concerned about this sort of issue?
Yeah. I mean, I think keep an eye on what's being proposed in your community. For the hydrogen hubs, there is a really, really strong community benefits requirement for these projects, and community engagement requirement that the government is putting in place. And so there will be a lot of opportunities for people to engage with these companies, ask them questions, like demand, you know, benefits plans and safeguards and all kinds of things. And so I think if you're worried about this hub in Pennsylvania, stay engaged and keep an eye out for those kinds of things, because they will be required.
Oh, that's helpful to know. I mean, we have asked you a lot and you've said a lot. Are there things that are important points that we haven't brought up?
No, I mean, I think we covered a lot of it. You know, it's just one of the fascinating things about hydrogen is, you know, most sort of experts in decarbonization really agree that it's important, that we're going to need it to some extent, but nobody knows to what extent. Like, nobody knows which uses will be key. They don't know how much we're going to need. And there's, you know, obviously a lot of trade-offs and a lot of risks. So it's just very complicated to imagine scaling up in the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've really appreciated you talking with us today. It's been very interesting and informative.
I certainly learned a lot, and a lot of different things that you brought up that weren't even in your article. So
if people are interested, I also, a few months back, I wrote another story about the proposal in the Northeast to create a hydrogen hub. So this was a partnership between New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New Jersey. And I think now Maine and Rhode Island are also involved. And even though it's about that area, it doesn't really specifically focus on that region. It kind of talks about what is a hydrogen hub? What does that mean? You know, what are the different possibilities? And I really tried to paint a picture of, like, what might this infrastructure look like in your community? And what are some of the different ways that it might be used. And so people can check that out if they're interested.
That's okay. In the grist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Yeah, thank you so much, Emily.
If you want to know more about Planet Philadelphia, go to planetphiladelphia.com. You could also find out more about other G-Town Radio programming by going to gtownradio.com. I hope you will consider making a small monthly donation to help Planet Philadelphia continue presenting interviews on important underreported environmental topics and exploring their complexities and intersections. Thank you so much for your support.